if a client is interested in this, which my supposition is they will be, if we are aware of it and we can be helpful and we speak the same language they do, it shows that we care. They will want to use us and will continue to use us. If for whatever reason we don't understand the language they're speaking or we don't get it, they're not going to say, figure it out. They're just going to find somebody that does. My view is that it's about relevance and being able to help people now, not 5 years from now.
Hello, and thank you for joining us this week on Dwayne Morris DEI 360 with Joe West. I am Yumika Anderson Howard, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Manager at the firm. On today's episode, we have our very own Dwayne Morris partner, Brad Malosky, discussing how ESG is changing minds and the business world as the marketplace increasingly demands corporate responsibility.
Hello, everyone. This is Joseph West. I'm a partner at Dwayne Morris. I also have the privilege of serving as the firm's Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer. With me today is our partner and resident ESG expert, Brad Malosky. Brad, hello.
How are you, Joe? You are too kind. Good to see you.
I'm doing great, my friend. So Let's jump right into it with a basic question. ESG, what is it and why do we care?
Great question. We don't have an hour, so I'll try to keep it pithy. ESG, environmental, E, S, social, G, governance. We care because the E part affects society in the context of the resources we use. So water, waste, energy, where they come from, where do they get to, what impact do they have on climate and resiliency, so that we're leaving the place, our planet, in as good or better shape for our kids than we found it. S, social. So think about how we deal with people that you're thinking about 24/7. Others are not always thinking about that. And so when we deal with folks like LGBTQ, African-American, Latino, how are we dealing with women as a group, and how are we making sure that there are opportunities for everybody, not just some, and how we're intersecting and interacting with people. So the S part historically wasn't really focused on too much until tragically George Floyd's death put a lot of people's lens on a situation that has been going on for decades, if not 100 plus years, 200 years. Relative to stuff in the United States. And so S, becoming much more a focus, diversity, equity, and inclusion starts to pick up or picks up pieces of that relative to workforce, relative to hiring, firing, relative to boards. Again, becoming more relevant, more topical as time goes on. Should have been relevant before, but more relevant now, which is stepping in the right direction, albeit not quickly enough, personally, there. And the G is governance. So again, the carryover of governance relative to the board, relative to public companies, what succession plans do we have in place, board tenure, compensation, privacy, data, cyber involved in that discussion, as well as kind of the pieces that we were talking about in the S, the diversity, equity, inclusion piece. Is the board, a bunch of old white folks, or do we have diversity within the board to get differing points of view so that the board represents more of society and can be more helpful strategically to the company? And so those pieces all fit together, environmental, social, governance, in a lens, a framework for purposes of how we make decisions and how we intersect with the people around us.
So you hit the nail on the head with that last comment, which is the stakeholders whose expectations are sort of driving the need for greater understanding, greater level of fluency around ESG-related issues. A decade ago, perhaps, there was probably kind of an accountability buffer, between those stakeholders and the decision makers, but that buffer is gone now. What's driving this? Why is it that all of a sudden, corporate leaders are having to pay attention to each of those issues in a bucket and the sort of confluence and the overlap among those issues? What's driving that?
So I think it's almost like your finger drew what I was thinking, which is there's a circle, and in the middle is kind of corporate life. And the circle is either getting smaller or pushing harder. And it's coming not from one place, as you indicated, it's coming from a multitude of places. And so why now? I think that it's been building for 10, 15 years. Depending on how you look at it, kind of Europe's about 10 years ahead of us, Australia 10, 15 years ahead of the United States, Canada about 5 years ahead. And so that's catching up corporate-wise on how people are looking at things. And so you have a confluence of pressure from regulators. So we've got kind of laws that are kind of pushing disclosure. So like the SEC, their proposed rules, 575 pages of them, relative to climate disclosure, makes it more real for some people. It's real for others already, but makes it more real and required whether you believe humans had an impact or not. You know, some don't. So it's okay, trying to be non-judgmental. It's hard for me, as you know, but trying to be non-judgmental.
Brett, facts are stubborn things.
Yes, it's amazing how that is. That's exactly right.
Let me interrupt you for a second. Yeah. You mentioned Europe. I want to touch. Sure. That reminded me of something that I think should be kind of an early warning for a lot of people in this space. And that was a few weeks ago when I guess the German equivalent of the FBI raided the offices of Deutsche Bank because the investment arm of Deutsche Bank allegedly had sort of inflated the extent to which they were engaged in a meaningful way in environmental issues. And that was found to be, at least the allegation is, violative of truthful disclosures as required by publicly traded companies. I thought that was fascinating.
Totally fascinating. And fits right into what we're talking about, which is that's one of those forces. And so you've got kind of the EU and its requirements. We've got the SEC now pushing climate disclosure as part of materiality and tying it to financial statements. And so companies that heretofore weren't really paying attention, weren't really reporting, relevant for them because they're going to have to. Companies that were reporting, they're going to have to verify the information, not just put it out and hope, you know, kind of what Deutsche Bank was doing a little bit, greenwashing, sort of putting out a statement without underpinning, without factual underpinning to what they were doing. Same thing kind of happened at BNY Mellon, paid a $1.5 million fine for similar, you know, activities where they were saying they were doing something, they weren't actually doing it. So you've got the confluence, I think, Joe, is a massive amount of money is coming into the ESG space, investors pushing for more robust information presented in a way that presents ESG type responses. What are you doing by way of ESG? What are your goals and how are you doing? We've got a set of numbers that are showing returns are better with companies that are interested and performing on and reporting on ESG. Some could debate those numbers.
And hence the business case.
Exactly. Right. We've got regs from the federal government that require all of their agencies to buy greener products, more sustainable products, to use electric vehicles. Well, that's the federal government. Well, the federal government then bleeds into private, you know, companies. We've got car companies that are shifting from combustible engines to all the major car companies. Every single one of them has said they're moving to an electronic platform and they will not be making, you know, engine-based cars after 2035. That's not just one or two, it's all of them. You've got investors that are looking for this type of return, this type of company, and they don't want to invest in a company that's not, you know, doing what they view as their values. We've got our kids, you know, younger kids, because as you and I get older, even though we don't think we're that old, you're still young. Our kids care.
I feel old sometimes.
Dude, so do I. I feel old like every day. Our kids care more than we do.
Yes.
This is a good thing. And so when they get to the check writing authority level in these various companies, they're going to look at us and say, what the heck were you guys doing? Why weren't you moving faster? And so they're getting older. You know, for the first time, Gen Z and Y are bigger than the baby boomers. and they're going to start dominating the employment scene on a GoFo.
So we started the conversation by looking back at what things were like 10 years ago. Let's jump in a time machine and look forward. When I left Walmart in 2011 to become the CEO of the Minority Corporate Counsel Association, I remember having a conversation with someone. I said, you just left the largest company in the world to essentially run a nonprofit. I said, yeah, but it is a nonprofit at the intersection of a space that people will start caring about more and more over the next 10 years. Yeah, the diversity related issues were kind of peripheral back then. They're at the core of everything right now. And my question for you is, 10 years ago, nobody even knew about or cared about that much ESG. What's the next 10 years going to look like in this space? And more importantly, as clients care about it more and more, what should firms be doing to make sure they are meeting the needs and the demands and the expectations of their clients?
Great question. I think, Joe, that kind of what you saw in making the move from Walmart. So it's fascinating. Walmart historically was viewed as not necessarily a good corporate actor, but when they decide to move, it moves the needle. And so what's happening here is people can do it volitionally, but people are being pushed by all these forces we just talked about. So I think that there's been a bunch of people, yourself, others, me, that have been working in the fields for 10, 15 years. Then all of a sudden, you know, now ESG is like front and center. So a lot of people working behind the scenes, now all of a sudden, you know, us geeks are not the cool kids, because that would never happen. But now ESG is, you know, kind of everywhere. You just need to know where to look at it. It's a little bit like the Matrix. Once you see it, you kind of see it everywhere. So I think that it won't even take 10 years. I think in the next 5 years, in particular, the SEC's proposed rules, they're going to get implemented, in my personal view. They may be watered down just a little bit, but they're going to get implemented. That's going to push a whole raft of people, both public companies and then their suppliers, into the fray of what are we doing? How are we doing it? Even if you're a non-believer, you're going to have to do it, which is measure, monitor, verify. That then becomes like the virtuous cycle. The more people that are doing it, the more others that will do it. And it will become not a new thing. It will become something that's just part of what happens throughout life. And to the firm question real quick, I think that, you know, I've said to others when they ask, I don't think this is really about a money-making venture for law firms. It might be for accounting firms because they're going to be hired to verify the information. But for us, it's more about relevance. You know, if a client is interested in this, which my, you know, supposition is they will be, if we are aware of it and we can be helpful and we speak the same language they do, it shows that we care. They will want to use us and will continue to use us. If for whatever reason we don't understand the language they're speaking or we don't get it, they're not going to say, figure it out. They're just going to find somebody that does already understand it. So I think, you know, my view is that it's about relevance and being able to help people now, not 5 years from now. And so as they start to evolve, that we've got to be ready to address that.
Well, I'll disagree with you in one part. getting and keeping clients is monetizing.
Well, fair enough. Well, there you go. I agree with that. So, and that dollar is well spent.
No, that's right. So let me ask you this. When we go back and think about what happened with Deutsche Bank and some of the other actors who have found themselves in the crosshairs of regulators because of their failure to live up to their expectations and promises and commitments in the environmental space, do you think we'll see the same sort of dynamic playing out when it comes to issues around diversity and inclusion, the other part of the ESG dynamic? That's a great, an interesting question. I'm curious about your thoughts on that.
So I think the answer is yes. That's the first time somebody's really asked me that. But I think that what's going to happen over time, I'm already seeing it a little bit over in Europe, where they do post and require posting of hiring, firing type numerics. As that evolves, and as we start to require, ask for, want DE&I information on people that are leaving, people that are at companies, as soon as that becomes a publishable thing in a chart diagram, well, then it's now included in a public statement. It's going to need to be verified. So my instinct is, yes, it'll be similar to Deutsche Bank. If you make a statement that you can't back up and the SEC sees it, or the European Union, you know, auditors see it, you're going to get in trouble. I mean, you're potentially.
Well, that's right. Well, there's two parts to it. One part of it is making representations that aren't true. The other part of it is making representations that aren't true, but trying to benefit financially from having made those representations. And that's where the issue really, really becomes troublesome.
100%.
And that,
yes.
Yeah, and that gets back really to the whole sort of constellation of expectations, because the only way you can benefit financially from making those representations is if the ecosystem cares about that issue. And that's where it all sort of builds on itself.
I think that's spot on. So if they are garnering, because of the expectation, some investor wants to have that type of company because it respects or it reflects their values. And if they make that investment and they subsequently find out that, no, not only did they not do that, but they sought you out in order to get your money, I definitely think that's exactly where the SEC is going to be focusing. And one of their subsequent rulemakings, which is now out for comment, has to do with greenwashing and their ability to target these companies. And so they're it's on their radar screen, and they're, you know, there's a moment in time. It's not a big surprise, you know, with President Biden in office, they view before the midterms now is the time to get this done before they might lose some votes. And so they're making hay right now.
So let me just ask this last question, or last sort of focal point of the discussion. We've talked about the direction that things are moving. But let's not kid ourselves, and you alluded to this earlier, there are still voices out there who think, the environmental movement is some wacky far left wing fringe element. Clearly, we all know there are voices out there that still don't understand, appreciate, or respect the value of diversity and inclusion, or meaningful approach to diversity and inclusion. What of the headwinds that still exist out there for these types of issues, even as they move into the corporate ecosystem? What are your thoughts about that sort of pushback in the space?
So, yes, there's always that danger. So as we look backwards at, you know, examples where we had, you know, kind of big tobacco, sometimes big pharma doing stuff that you or I might not think is appropriate or under the law or morally, you know, you'd have some other actors doing similar things in clean energy. You know, folks who are, you know, they have a vested interest in not moving that quickly to clean energy. And so putting out false data, putting out kind of questions about climate change, you know, and that's gone on for 20 years, 30 years, not longer. And so the ability to sort of get past that always is going to be for real until we're really there. And so, you know, whenever there's a pause, so we've got a horrific war going on in Ukraine, we've got inflation going, you know, up, interest rates going up, you know, 1.25 over the last 6 months, that gives people pause. You know, they get nervous about change. In particular, you look at gas prices driving some conversation online, you know, and so, you know, you and I suspect, I don't put words in mouth, you know, we would agree that the president's got nothing to do with that. Past president, current president, future president. But people get locked on to that's an issue. And so I think that depending on the macroeconomic circumstances that are around, it could impact kind of uptake relative to how quickly we move. That said, I do think, maybe it's wishful thinking, but I do think that the genie is out of the bottle at this point.
Yeah.
You know, with the amount of money in the space, with the, you know, kind of the focus there, and with the SEC pushing it, and with other regulations pushing it, and our kids, I just think that if somebody's not on board, they're going to get pulled on board. It's not going to be everybody, it's not going to be everywhere, but there's going to be a movement. I see it already almost in, you know, not to poke at the Wall Street Journal, but not exactly the most leftist publication. Again, they're not supportive all the time at all of ESG, but they're reporting about it. And so it may not be every moment on the front page, but if you look almost every day, there's some article that touches on the point of view. It may be in the editorial where they're bashing it, but they're hitting it.
That's right. And I think there's a certain, it's like there's sort of the weight of inevitability about movements like this. I mean, you and I are old enough to remember, speaking of big tobacco, when all the CEOs of the tobacco companies stood and testified that cigarette smoking was not addictive. I mean, that seems like a world away now.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. But Brad, listen, this has been a fascinating conversation. It's something that I think we will put this one in a time capsule and open it, like you said, not even 10 years from now, maybe a year to 3 years from now. And everyone will realize how prescient this conversation was, hopefully, on an issue that people are really starting to care about and should.
Hey, I'm not sure how prescient. I've never been called prescient before. although my dog thinks that, nobody else does. I think that you have been focusing on an area that is evolving and has now picked up steam and will continue to for all the right reasons. This is part of that with, you know, a different framing. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, it's not that this time's going to be different. I think that people's ability to continue the focus, because events keep happening that bolster that there's something that needs to change. It makes it under the weight of inevitability, as you said. And so I do think that the pace of this has picked up markedly over the last 3 years. And when I talk to kind of heads of sustainability at companies, not as big as Walmart, but like big real estate companies where I play, they're paying attention. And that just, right. It's a harbinger of others are going to start paying attention because those companies are going to start pulling them into their orbit. It's like when Walmart said, hey, if you don't have these values and you're not in our top 100, we're not going to use you anymore. So you need to have these sustainability features. Well, that gets a bunch of people to wake up and sit up and pay attention. And so that's kind of what's going to happen. These big companies that are reporting companies that are going to need to report on scope 3, which is their supply chain, they're going to pull a bunch of smaller companies in their orbit into having to pay attention. And that's just going to continue the momentum, you know, going forward, I think.
Brad, listen, thank you for your time, my friend. Always good to spend some time with you and keep doing what you're doing. I'm proud of you.
Thanks, big guy. The pleasure's mine. You too. Keep going what you're doing and it makes a difference. So all good stuff.
Thanks, Brad.
See you, bye.